I'm going to call to order the Industrial Education, Economic Development, Finance and Policy Committee. And will the clerk take the roll?
Pawlowski.
Present.
Sandel.
Present.
Keel.
Present.
Bierman.
Present.
Bliss.
Present.
Burkle.
Present.
Edelson. Edelson. Frazier.
Present.
Hamilton.
Present.
Liz Lagarde.
Present.
McDonald.
Present.
Anstead.
Present.
Sundin.
Present.
Mr. Chair, a quorum is present.
Ms. Schaefel, I think Representative Edelson is excused. She had emailed us earlier.
So noted.
Representative Sandel, do you have a motion for us?
I do, Mr. Chair. I read the minutes and I move their adoption.
Representative Sandel moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevailed. Minutes are approved. Members, we're going to go into a series of presentations today dealing with one of our main topics. And my one sentence summary is every high school senior should have the option of graduating not just with a traditional diploma, but also with an employable skill set. So with that as our introduction, I have individuals from the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Educators, Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators. And the first person on my list is Jessica, is it Lippa? Ms. Lippa, would you introduce yourself to the committee and begin your testimony?
Thank you. Good morning, Representative Pawlowski and committee members. My name is Jessica Lippa. I am representing the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Education Administrators. I'm also the CTE director in Anoka-Hennepin School District, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here. So thank you so much. Career and technical education in our state provides relevant programming for students to acquire challenging academic, technical, and employability skills, leading to post-secondary education and or preparing them for high-skill, high-wage, and in-demand occupations. CTE, that we call it Career and Tech Ed, or CTE programs, they align with secondary, post-secondary, and they align to business and industry. We create multiple pathways for our students in a variety of occupations. Many of our programs across the state actually are taught by business and industry leaders, and we offer many industry certifications and credentials that will allow our high school students to acquire entry-level positions, maybe sometimes while they're still in high school. We oftentimes refer to, we hear our program referred to vocational education, and there's a couple of understandings that are critical when just in moving forward to understand that. They're often used simultaneously, or they're oftentimes called shop classes. And that is a term that those are were fundamentally different, and those are terms that we don't usually use anymore. And so the philosophy of the two of those things are quite different. CTE focuses on multiple pathways, multiple entry and exit points into different careers leading to those high-skill, high-wage, and in-demand occupations. Vocational education of the past was generally geared to support a very specific technical skill into getting a student out of high school into a very specific technical job, whereas this focuses on all aspects of work. Career and technical education focuses on all aspects of careers in general. We offer programming in a wide range of careers across our state. Part of our role as administrators is to work with our business and industry leaders. We all offer boards, we're advisory boards, where we work with our partners in the community and partners in business and industry to determine, take a look at all of our programming options, our courses, our curriculum, to assure that it is relevant to future education or for our future careers and for our students. Our programming offers a wide range of careers. We offer, and so we also look at, we work with DEED and other community partners as well and career centers to really take a look and make sure that we're offering the correct programming. We're projecting out 5 years, 10 years, making sure that our programming aligns to what is needed in the future. We offer programs in a wide range of different programming. And so some of the things that we offer are in agriculture, food and natural resources, family and consumer sciences, which encompasses everything from education careers to hospitality and culinary careers, business and marketing, occupations, health careers. We have many of our students getting certified as nursing assistants, EMT, a wide range of medical occupations, and trade and industry careers, which is a broad umbrella for students going into construction, manufacturing, IT, transportation, which includes both automotive, aviation, and all aspects of transportation. So that's just kind of a broad overview of what CTE is and what we're doing across the state. And now my colleague, Troy Haugen, will be planning on speaking to the different licensing options that are available for our teachers and why this is such a complex system.
Mr. Haugen, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. My name is Troy Haugen. I am the Director of Career and College Readiness at Lakes Country Service Cooperative. I also am the privileged to serve as the president currently of the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Administrators. This morning, I get to talk to you about one of our favorite subjects, licensure around career and technical education, which I know is not the favorite topic for many people. It's something that I've been kind of living and breathing in for the last several years. It's a complex piece. It's a very, very, very complex piece, but it's complex intentionally because career and technical education is very complex, and it has to be complex. Every time we try and simplify it, and trust me, these are conversations we have a lot. Jess and I have these conversations very often. Brian, who you'll hear from after me, have these conversations frequently. I have these conversations with people within Pelsby. In fact, I just very literally 2 minutes ago got an email back from Alex Liuzzi, the executive director of Pelsby, about a very complex question that we're wrestling with. He said, I don't know the answer to this. They have to be complex because career and technical education is complex because we're talking about students entering careers that are tied directly to the economy, tied directly to business and industry. It's very complex. But to get to a really high level, career and technical education licenses within all of these pieces that we're talking about have basically four buckets. We have this bucket of licenses called broad-based licenses, and Jess kind of talked about those licenses, those program areas of agriculture, our agriculture education programs, our business education programs, and our family and consumer science programs. So those three licensure programs that we have are really pretty broad-based. So I work up in Fergus Falls, West Central Economic Development Region 4. I have 26 school districts that are part of my Perkins Consortia. Vast majority of my area, my programs, my school districts have those three programs still. And they are those broad-based licensure programs. They can teach a lot of different things under those licensure areas. So ag, food, natural resources, business ed, marketing, and family consumer sciences are what's called those broad-based licenses. Then our next kind of layer of licensure programs are what we call the careers licenses. And those are a little bit more specific and tied more specific to industry careers. So those are what we call there's two kind of components that are required for those licenses. They're career and technical education core, and then the content in those. And those are a little bit newer, and those are what we call, again, those are the careers licenses, and those are the construction careers, the manufacturing careers, the transportation careers, the communication technology careers, medical careers, hospitality careers, early childhood careers, and creative design careers. So those are called the careers licenses. And they're really more specific to those careers. And their scope of what they can teach is a little bit more limited. What we oftentimes see is teachers that have those licenses probably need a couple of different licenses, especially in our rural areas, because they're going to need a little bit more depth to what they need, what they're going to need. The third kind of bucket of licensure areas in career and technical education is what's called career pathways, and they get really limited. So career pathways is kind of defined within PELSBY is licensure areas that don't have PELSBY board standards. So they get really specific, and I can actually only can think of two areas right now. So they are very technical careers that don't have licensure standards. So the two areas that I can only think of right now are law enforcement and cosmetology. And so like up in my area, I don't have any law enforcement or cosmetology programs in my high school areas, but I know like Jess, who works for Anoka Hennepin, has both. There's no law enforcement licensure standards for PELSBY for a high school teacher or cosmetology. So what they do is they obtain a career pathways license in law enforcement or a career pathways license in cosmetology. And then the final bucket is called an endorsement. And for an endorsement, you have to have an incumbent teaching license, and then you get an endorsement on top of that. And there's only one career and technical education endorsement, and that's called the Teacher Coordinator of Work-Based Learning. And that is really becoming a very, very important licensure endorsement within career and technical education, because we all know the really high level of importance of a work experience for students within the high school setting. And I could go on for days and days and days on talking about that, but I won't. And then the next really important piece to really see the big piece of context is, so how do we get there? If we have a person that wants to get into the classroom, what are the pathways to get there? And there's really four different ways to get to the classroom. But it all kind of depends on what your background is and if you already have a teaching license of some sort. So the first real option is one we all kind of know about, and that's traditional teacher preparation. In Minnesota, there's a variety of different options. So traditional teacher preparation is just engaging in college and universities that have PELSBY board approved teacher preparation programs. All of our broad-based licenses have at least one approved teacher preparation programs. Many of our careers licenses have teacher preparation programs, but not all of them do. Not all of them have initial licensure programs. Not all of them have additional licensure programs. So there's space there that we're having some disconnect. The second option is through alternative teacher preparation programs. Alternative teacher preparation programs by statute have been available since 2012, but there was a major shift in 2017 and that changed in 2018. An alternative by law allows school districts, charter schools, or education-related nonprofits to become teacher preparation providers. So Lakes Country Service Cooperative, the service cooperative that I work for, became an alternative teacher preparation provider. So we are an alternative teacher preparation provider for only additional licensure programs for CTE core, construction, transportation, manufacturing, and teacher coordinator work-based learning. But we are only able to provide teacher preparation for candidates that already have a teaching license. So for example, one of the things that if you didn't notice, tech ed, technology education, and industrial arts are not licenses considered to be career and technical education. What they're missing is they're missing that CTE core. So districts that have tech ed licensed teachers do not obtain CTE revenue, are not eligible for Perkins levy, Perkins funding through their Perkins consortium. They are not career and technical education teachers. They're not eligible for any sort of accept of funding or related to career and technical education. So I have a lot of teachers coming to me saying, I want the construction careers license, which is eligible. I have a tech ed license. I want construction career. I want the construction careers. They have the ability to come to me, work through, and obtain that construction careers license, which is a huge pathway option for them. That's great. We can work with them. But we need more of that. We need more of those opportunities. So that's one option. So alternative teacher preparation is another option. Third option is licensure via portfolio. Licensure via portfolio is an option for all licensure areas, as long as Pelsby is determined that the candidate is eligible to submit a portfolio. Licensure via portfolio, really quickly, is basically whatever standards the candidate needs to meet, the candidate has to then put together a portfolio of evidence, submit that portfolio of evidence directly to Pelsby. Pelsby then sends that portfolio of evidence for whichever portfolios they need to obtain to complete, sends it out to reviewers. Reviewers review the portfolio. If they meet all the standards as determined by the reviewers, the Pelsby will then give them the license or allow them to apply for the license. Again, certainly a pathway that is an option, not always successful, sometimes very successful. I've seen some very successful candidates. I've seen some candidates not be successful with that. And the final pathway towards licensure is progression through the tiers. Right now, the way the tiered licensure law is written, you can start in tier one as a career and technical education teacher, add through some additional experience, through some additional professional development, through some additional other types of credentialing, you can move to tier two. Again, through some additional experience, through some additional professional development, you can move to tier three. That is incredibly important for us to make sure that we're continuing to think about within career and technical education to maintain, specifically for those teachers that are highly technical, teaching highly technical areas, because they are oftentimes leaving a highly technical field, leaving jobs that are paying much more than their teaching job is being taught, and to ask them to go back into a traditional teacher preparation or another teacher preparation piece to start over again doesn't work. We oftentimes lose candidates in the field because we want them to start over again. And again, that's another conversation I'd like to have, but that's another pathway to licensure. So those are those basically four pathways to licensure, but again, not everybody qualifies for each one of those pathways. The big piece to understand is that there's, like, medical careers, for example, has no pathways to licensure, no identified pathways to licensure, formal identified pathways to licensure. There's no traditional teacher preparation programs in Minnesota. There's no alternative teacher preparation programs in Minnesota. Their only pathway to licensure right now is through portfolio or through progression through tiers. However, if you have somebody that already has a teaching license, so let's say you've got a health teacher that has a whole bunch of medical background that already has a tier three or tier four license, they don't have the ability to progress through tiers because you can't, by law and rule, hold more than one tier, more than one tier at a time. So that individual medical, that tier, that teacher does not have the ability to progress through tiers. So we have some really big issues around pathways. So all of that to say is that we need more pathways to licensure. There's not enough pathways, and we have all kinds of space for multiple different pathways. So please, let's talk about more of those. Thank you for the opportunity. I know I talk fast. I know there's a lot of technical pieces in there. So please, if you've got questions, please ask. I'm more than willing to help on anything. Just please know that I'm more than willing to help on however any of us are more than willing to help and do whatever we can to help. So with that, I'm happy to introduce my colleague, Brian Cashman. Thank you, Representative Pawlowski.
Okay, before we go to Mr. Cashman, I neglected to tell the committee that there'll be a high-stakes test at the end of this hearing based primarily on Mr. Haugen's testimony. So I hope all of you took copious notes. I know I did, so I think I'm ready. I see a couple thumbs up. Thank you, Mr. Haugen. That was very interesting. Brian Cashman, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. My name is Brian Cashman. I'm dialing in from Red Wing, Minnesota this morning. I work for the Goodhue County Education District. One of my roles is to support career and tech education at the high school level with 23 school districts in Southeast Minnesota, covering six counties. So really that corner of the state. And I just wanted to loop back to what Jess started with, and that is the tremendous value of our career and tech education programs. So any efforts that we can make to increase that teacher pipeline, increase efforts for more students to engage with career and tech education at the high school in the post-secondary level benefits all of us. And in two main ways. Number one, at the high school level, career and tech education programs, no matter the pathway, offer career-connected learning. So there's real value to it, and there's an outcome for it, and students can see that. Number two is that we have increased student success. So the data bears out that students that are engaged in career tech education courses at the high school level have higher graduation rates, have higher success indicators. It's just all around good for young people. And just to give you a brief example, career and tech education takes a lot of different forms. But this morning, right about now, we have hundreds of students in the southeast corner of the state participating in a virtual career fair that's taking a look at 16 career pathways that students could engage in and choose to follow after their high school education. We've got over 30 professionals, mostly from small towns and rural Minnesota, staffing this career fair with the whole purpose of being exposure of students to what they can do with their education, the pathways available to them, especially after their high school education. So that's just one small example of what we're doing. And I would just end with this personal note that my wife and I are parents of three young children, and I'm a product of maybe the traditional system, went to high school, went straight to a four-year college, went straight into education. But I can say this, that I now know through my work with career and tech education all the awesome opportunities available to students, to young people. And I would say that for our three children, I would be very comfortable with them choosing a route that may not include a straight traditional four-year college and maybe choosing another option. And I guess that's the greatest compliment I could give any program, service, or initiative, that I would feel comfortable endorsing it for my own children. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, before we move on to the next group, do you have any questions from any of these three? I don't see any hand. All right, I'm not sure who that is. Let me just take a look.
McDonald,
Representative McDonald, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Haugen, and I did take some copious notes. And the question that I have, you certainly mentioned that it is complicated, and it certainly does seem complicated. I just have a quick story. I was talking to a good friend of mine who's a manufacturer here in Delano. And back in the 80s, he taught at Hendeman Technical College in the South Campus, where actually I was going to study commercial photography. Anyway, at that time, I think pretty much 1987, when I was graduating, it became a technical center to a technical college. And at that time, my buddy Cal, who had a manufacturing company, very successful, was teaching hydraulics two nights a week. And many students really appreciated his teaching. Matter of fact, they said he was one of the best teachers that they've had in the course. At that time in the 80s, the technical center went to technical college, and they changed over to the college system, which was fine by me because then I could say I had a college degree. Didn't make a difference, so if it was a center or college. But from that, then they let all those instructors go, not teachers, instructors. And he was one of the most effective instructor. But from that moment, the college said, no, we're not done. You don't have a license. You're out of here. And he said that was a big, big mistake at the time because they were doing wonderful work. And many students were successful, including a cousin of mine who had Cal's class. Since then, became good friends. What can we do, Mr. Haugen, to make make it less complicated and make the pathway to licensure easier? And for that matter, do we need a licensure for a good instructor, such as my buddy Cal, to teach hydraulics at technical education colleges?
Mr. Haugen.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I think part of the issue is the pathways are there, but I think that the overarching narrative about how complicated it is gets in the way. Your buddy could probably get a license and probably not all that difficulty. That's not the word. I can't even use my words anymore. I don't think it would be all that difficult for him to obtain a license, but I think this narrative about it's so hard to do it gets in the way, because I don't think it would be that hard. Have him connect with me and we'll get him a license. But this overarching narrative that it's just too hard is what's getting in the way. I think that's the simple answer. A story that I could tell you really quickly is I was having a conversation with a connected colleague of mine saying, I have this para, a friend of mine that finished his education degree at Harvard, and he didn't pass his basic skills test. Teacher of color, and he just gave up. I said, what does he have? He said, what do I have to do to get him a license? I said, send me an email and we'll work on it. He can get a license. I said, we've got a Zoom set up for a couple of days from now and we'll get him a license. I think the narrative around it is probably way more powerful than the actual process is. I think that's the easiest way for me to answer that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Yes, I would agree with you. I think that we have to get rid of the narrative for sure. And maybe not hard is the correct term at this point, but maybe the thought that you have to go back to school and spend the time and spend the money for someone who's in his 70s, who's willing to give 2 or 3 days a week, teaching. So hard, yes, but also just changing the narrative and making it very easy for these instructors or professionals to get back in. I'll have a conversation with them and share this discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hogan.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had to figure out my mute. thanks a lot for coming. I've got a couple of extensions of Representative McDonald's question. Mr. Haugen, if you could give us some kind of a guide about things that we could do legislatively to help to make this more effective, I would hope the chair would also be interested, I'm assuming that, but so that we can remove any barriers that need to be removed in order to get teachers. I have watched a young man go from a construction career to now a CTE teacher in one of our schools in my district. It's kind of funny because when I look at this kid, I think I never would have pegged him as a teacher of any kind. He was kind of a screwball when he was going to school with my kids. And he's an excellent teacher and very successful. So I really support this and how we can help to make this more effective and quicker to get those teachers in the classroom. And then my other comment would be, Mr. Cashman, did you say what age group, I might not have caught it, that you are doing those career meetings right now to show the students how low do you go when you're talking to those students, what grade levels?
Oh yes,
Representative
absolutely.
Keel, I think we'll go to Mr. Haugen first, and yes, anything you could give us we'd certainly use, and that's the purpose of these hearings, to gather enough information to see if we can enact legislation to assist you. So Mr. Haugen, you're first, then we'll go to Mr. Cashman.
Sure, Representative Pawlowski, Representative Keel. Yes, certainly. I will certainly provide you with some pieces that I would love for you to consider. Representative Keel, I'm well aware of your region, your district. I work, actually have a couple of candidates in my program that are from your region. I work very closely with the Perkins coordinator from up there. And yes, I will certainly put some thoughts together, and I would thank you so much for asking.
Mr. Haugen, if you would copy that to at least the chair and also Mr. Wirth, the committee administrator. So if we need to get something drafted, we are under some stress here for drafting legislation, and we'd like to be able to give you as much time to make that draft possible.
So, of course, absolutely.
Mr. Cashman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kuehl, that's a great question. So the event that I referenced that's happening actually today and tomorrow is juniors, high school juniors and seniors are attending that virtual career fair. And one of the ideas behind it is to expose those students to the great opportunities that are there right in their own communities. And so they don't necessarily have to move to the Twin Cities per se or go somewhere else. There are good, well-paying jobs, great careers right in their own backyard. Now, this said, we are able to connect career exploration with our Perkins funding from grades 5 through 12. So we can get down into the middle school and late elementary grades all the way up through grade 12. And that's not to preclude the fact that some school districts are looking at a K through 12 system with an emphasis on career exploration, the Red Wing School District being one of them.
Representative Kuehl.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. Yes, I'd appreciate that. And I really think we lack when we do not include at least ninth and 10th grade students. I think students will be more interested in applying themselves even at a fifth grade level. Excuse me, I had to plug in my, all of a sudden I realized you might be disappearing on me. At a fifth grade level to see why they would need the academics that they have to have. You know, what is so important about English? What is so important about, I just think when our children are fast, everything is fast in their world with technology, I think it's really important for them to see a purpose. And so the more we talk about it in a younger age, especially in the high school grades, how important that is for those kids to see a purpose and direction. I've been blessed with quite a few grandchildren, and while we don't talk about what do you want to do when you grow up, there is more, you have an interest in XYZ, and I have a grandson that's very interested in cars, and that's just come alive in the last 2 years, and he is an eighth grader. So I think, you know, to develop those things with that exposure is really important to the jobs that are available. And the importance of them. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions in the same vein as my colleagues here, and just following up on Representative Kuehl. My question maybe is for Ms. Lipa regarding the pathways, the various pathways of these careers, and when students in high school sign up for one of these. I'm just curious whether they can try more than one of the pathways, because it's all about exploration at that age. And so I'm wondering when they get to apply or to participate in any of these and get their feet wet a little bit. And then, how diverse is that across the state? How many kids across the state are getting to participate in some of these pathways overall, would you say? And then I also have a follow-up on some of the questioning of Mr. Haugen regarding licensure. That is in particular the use of waivers for the community educators who know the trade, are teaching in the schools, and how long can they persist in the system without going back and taking some of the relevant and I would say necessary pedagogy to become better educators. And I appreciate your comments on how that can happen for them and how that needs to be made and presented to them in a fashion where they can accomplish that and stay in the classroom, because we need them all in the classroom. So if I could get answers on those two, I would appreciate your, thank you.
Ms. Lipa, I think you were first. Is that correct? Representative Bierman, was the first set of questions to Ms. Lipa?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Representative Pawlowski and Representative Bierman, thank you. The career pathways that we encourage students to do, typically in most of our schools, in most of our school districts across the state, and this is pretty broad-based, but you are looking at students participating anywhere from from middle school through high school. And so ideally at the middle school level, and even in the early high school level, for some students that maybe this hadn't been a push for, our students are doing a lot of career exploration. And so you do see a lot of that introductory career exploration, and that can be done at any time. Running a CTE high school program that I run in Anoka Hennepin, even at the end of the day, what I tell parents is that at the end of the day, if your student tries out a cosmetology course and finds that you don't like customers and don't like to stand on your feet, I feel okay that we did our job and that you can walk away without going into debt and said, hey, at least I explored this, but maybe I'm really into engineering, or maybe I really want to fly a plane and try aviation. And so we do encourage that. Some students will find over the course of the entire, throughout their time, they know they want to go into medical. So they take a medical careers class, they take a medical criminology class, maybe they take nursing assistant and even an EMT course. Those students are geared and they know exactly the path that they want to stay in. And we just have students that will. The idea behind career and technical education is multiple exit and entry pathways so that whatever you've taken will only support your future career development.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. That answers my question, just to get the exposure element and then the more in-depth as they kind of grapple on to what they want to do and move forward. Thank you.
And then the next question, I think, was to Mr. Haugen.
Yes, please.
Okay, Mr.
Haugen. Mr. Chair, Representative Bierman, that's a great question. So, and it's this, it's a complex question and a really complex answer too. So, depending on obviously the let's back it up to try and make it a relatively simple one. So let's, for example, say that we have a tier one teacher. There is really no waivers anymore. There's no such thing as a community expert anymore. There's only tier licenses now. the non-licensed community expert permission that used to exist no longer exists as of July 1 of 2018. Now that what used to be a community expert would likely be a tier one teacher. Tier one teacher that within the law now allows a career technical education teacher to be a tier one perpetually, but that would never be the goal. I don't think a district would ever want that teacher to be a tier one teacher forever. The goal, I think, most districts would hope that teacher would progress through those tiers. With that, I'll speak from an example that I can think of that is a successful example. So I have a district that I serve that had a teacher in an automotive that was a high-level ASE certified automotive teacher, associate's degree teacher that had all the ASE certifications, but had never taught before. Left the field because just physically didn't want to do that physical harm to his body, because that work is very physically damaging to your body. Came in, became an automotive teacher in this district. That district gave that teacher, as a tier one teacher, that district supported that teacher in obtaining those pedagogical knowledge over the course of the first, for 2 years now, and has now been able to move to a tier two. Is now a tier two teacher, and continues to help support that teacher in gaining that pedagogical knowledge, and is a very successful tier two teacher, and his students are doing remarkable things, and continues to do remarkable things, and with the hopes now as this teacher continues to develop and support, and with the support of their district and mentorship within the district, to. In 3 years, we'll be able to move to a tier three. So acknowledging the fact that this district is putting a level of support around this teacher, that it's being able to build its own, growing its own teacher within its own expertise, and in a way that it does, and it's acknowledging that within its own system, which is a different, significantly different mental model than going back to college and learning that pedagogy that way. And that's a hard thing for some people to be able to acknowledge. And it's a hard conversation to have, and it's a really hard thing to wrap around. Now, we'll acknowledge that maybe not all districts do that. But the other thing we have to, and this is perhaps maybe a controversial statement, but it's fundamentally, it's the truth. It's the thing that I say over and over and over again. A license does not assure quality. A license is simply the assurance of minimum competence. And if a license was an assurance of quality, everybody with a driver's license would be a good driver. Every physician with a doctor's license would be a good doctor. Every plumber would be a good plumber. You could fill in the license. And every tier four teacher that got a license from a higher education institution would be a good teacher. We have to stop equating a license with quality. So I know that probably doesn't completely answer your question, Representative Bierman, but I think the reality is we can build a high quality workforce within our own districts, and that's really where we need to also continue to start. It's not an or, but and. How do we really start building a quality workforce within our own districts as well? And that's also how us as a Perkins Consortium and us as Jess and Brian and I, we're really working hard as Perkins Consortia as well to build our workforce within ourselves. Because it's not only about recruitment into our programs, recruitment in our districts, it's also the retention component of that. And that's how we are trying to work too. So that it's you're right, it's complex.
Representative Bierman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Haugen, thank you very much. That was it is a complex issue. But you've helped a great deal in my understanding of it now, and just understanding how that waiver is no longer in place, that people become tier one. And, you know, that's basically a floor which they can build up from, which is sort of as I understand the tier situation, the basis for it. And so it's good to hear your perspective and your thoughts on those pathways. Thank you very much.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Ms. Lipa, I believe. Growing up in Minneapolis and attending Minneapolis Public Schools, shop classes or industrial ed classes that you spoke about earlier were required for boys, wood shop, electricity, printing, and mechanical drawing, I guess. And in high school, there were auto shops and even a school restaurant that was available for students. They were very effective and terrific programs. Are programs like that generally available in all high schools and junior high schools around the state? The junior high shop classes were required, and I don't know if the curriculum still has room for classes like that. I thought they were. In addition, I suppose, we talk about music classes, which I think are also something of a career development. Are they available, or have schools pushed them out of their curriculum?
Ms. Lippa.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandell, thanks. Actually, those are programs that are in all districts. Of course, districts have local control. The district that I work in, we still require that students at the middle school take either technology education or family consumer sciences for that career exploration to be done in the middle school. And then at the high school level, while it's not required, the electives are. And so students, but those programs are alive and well. They're oftentimes called different things. Many of our in the metro area, I think that's sometimes a little easier to offer a wider range of programming and have all programs available somewhere. But even in across the state, those programs are doing very, very well. They're oftentimes guided and hopefully guided really with the support of business and industry saying that in this region, we need to have medical careers or we need to have more manufacturing. I know that my own experience alone, several years ago, we went through this process with our local manufacturers who said, you don't give us enough manufacturing and you're right in the metro and how can we help you? And they really came in and worked with our teachers. They trained our teachers, offered helped us to offer new courses. And so across the state, our CTE directors and our Perkins directors are very much listening to the regional areas of business and industry, saying we absolutely have to prepare students not only for broad-based career exploration, but also these industries, because it's super critical in our area.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Levent.
Members, any more questions of this group? Mr. Cashman, you said you were delivering your testimony from the Red Wing Southeast Technical Community College. And the Red Wing High School is across the highway from your facility, is it not?
That is correct.
And you've been in that facility recently?
I have, yes.
And you've noticed that the entrance to that facility, do they still have their Hall of Fame for past students?
On the Red Wing campus? I haven't noticed that.
Well, when you go into the main door, I think they still have their Hall of Fame for past students. You may want to look very closely. You may recognize that someone that was in this hearing is on that wall, just as an FYI.
Got it.
Okay. Members, next on my list, I have Superintendent Jeff Bertram, New Ulm Public Schools. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair. Jeff Bertram, New Ulm School Superintendent, and I support everything that's been said earlier. I want you to know that we're in a small school in southern Minnesota, of which I have about 2,200 kids pre-K grade 12, and I am the only licensed shop teacher in the district. I say that because it is tough to get licensed industrial technology teachers in the workforce to come back to schools. You heard a lot of testimony about the process for licensing, but the reality we're seeing out here is because of the shortage of skilled workers, they can get paid a lot more to stay in industry than they can come through the tiered system to come back to school. We're doing our very best to get people that way. We took a science teacher and made them a shop teacher, and I'm using old terminology, but my background is in 88 when I started teaching in Iowa. We had a lot more programming. But I want to just kind of support the whole licensing thing. We're all doing our best to find people. These programs got cut from the 1990s to 2012. Carl Perkins got cut. The Vocational Act had been kind of shuttered because of budget cuts. Reagan had his No Child Left Behind. We had different eras of things coming up. Then in Minnesota, we went to this thing called testing. Everybody goes to college, everybody has to be tested. And another thing that's frustrating as a superintendent with our kids is legislation is being introduced again every year. Add civics, add personal finance, add this. Anytime you add more, the kids have less electives. So we're talking about trying to get experiences for kids. We have to look at the cause effect when we add more legislative requirements to schools. So I'm advocating of a couple things. Leave flexibility for schools on what they can do for our kids to find a pathway that suits them best. And our job as schools isn't to find employees for workers, but to provide opportunities so the kids can figure out what is the best path for me. You heard that earlier about how we're doing that in all the schools. I could go on and on. I know you have a whole bunch of information that was sent to you and provided for you as committee people, and I'd be willing to offline talk about it. But I wanna highlight a couple things if I could. So if you would mind, Mr. Chair, can I share my screen with you to show a few things that I think are pertinent?
Superintendent, absolutely. Please do so.
At this point, I'm not sure which screen you see. Do you see a white paper or a typed paper document on your screen?
Yes.
All right. So that is kind of what New Ulm has been going through. I'm just going to scroll quick through it. We spent a lot of time with our partners in the community here trying to figure out what it is that they want us to do for them to help kids be interested in the different CTE careers. And sometimes I do regress to the fact that some people still in our community call it vocational. And we have to be aware of the people and terminology. So when I talk to people, they hear vocational, we're trying to explain to them what those careers are. And we go through things. So in New Ulm, we've set up a great partnership with the chamber, with the city, with the EDA, all these different partnerships to figure out how we're going to work together to help our workforce. We're like everybody else. There are help wanted signs everywhere. Even in the pandemic, there are still help wanted signs. So when this pandemic gets to the point where it might be a little better for everybody, there's still going to be a shortage in our area here for skilled workers. So this is what we've been doing the last 5 years in New Ulm. A lot of collaboration with our partners. Great work going on with them. Talking points about the economy. We have people retiring at a rapid pace here in Nuwam and in the state. We've done a lot of resourcing projections, community engagements. We provided student teacher internships. If you haven't looked around in many towns, there's a lot of concrete buildings. People have no idea what happens behind those concrete buildings. So we have to expose our kids to what happens, and then our teachers. We did summer programming, updated our programs at our middle school and our high school. You heard earlier about how career investigation goes. We start in the middle school, grade five, work our way up to all the way through 12th grade. We work with our Perkins Consortium. We work with the technical college. We put money towards it, towards our CTE equipment upgrades. These are things as a school we do with resources from the community. And you can see a list of things here in the next 24 months we're working on. Our biggest program right now is developing a regional CTE center. I heard from Jess that they have one up there in Okehennepin. And I'll be honest, when you ask the question, do all schools have these programs? They don't outstate Minnesota. They can't afford them. So you talk about the equipment, trying to find people who are licensed to do it. Do I have enough kids to offer that program? If you can't find a licensed person the way it is, you can't get a part-time licensed person. So outstate Minnesota struggles with getting the right people in the programming. Nuwam is very fortunate. Our school and our community have supported it. I highlighted the one part that is we need additional resources to operate and maintain our programming. I can go back to the jar and put my hand out and keep asking the community for support, but at some point they get fatigued. So from the state level, my passion is understanding opportunities for kids. You know, the nation at risk was the big one for the economy. And then we now are a nation at risk again. I'm going to show you a statistic that should strike out when you talk about what we're doing for the economy. In the next 4 years, over 200,000 skilled labor jobs are lost in Minnesota. You look at an average salary of 50 to grand, how much in lost wages there are, how much unlost income taxes for the state. That's a big impact for the state budget. So what are we going to do to work together as a state, community, and school districts to make a better impact and be better prepared for the future? And it's a passion of mine because I get knocked on the door from the trucking firms, the manufacturing firms, the restaurants, you name it. What are we doing to provide programming for our kids? You know, and I can say I'm proud in Nuwam about what we do, but being proud is different than getting it done. Some had asked what kind of program we do in the schools. Real quick, you provided this information in your packet. We prepared a career guide a couple of years ago to send to our community so they knew what we did and the partnerships we have. So you go through these things, we want to make sure the kids then got these to go home with their parents, because believe it or not, parents for some reason think that every kid still should go to a four-year college. And how do you change that vernacular to say post-secondary means beyond high school, not everybody going to four-year college? Find your niche, find your passion. But we do believe every kid should have some type of a program, whether it's a 9-month, 12-month, 24, 48, and so on. So our programming is based on that methodology. And we have business partners for all the different career fields. We make sure we have partners set up so the kids can see real life application, what works. And again, Nuwam is big enough to have these partnerships. Other schools much smaller around our area do not have the same opportunities. So these are great things going on at our high school, more of an introduction, exploratory, getting connected with business, and so on. And I know I'm going pretty fast through the scrolling, but I do know you have this in your handouts. I think the biggest thing that we're missing is having the technical skill training opportunities at an advanced level so that our kids can really see what those jobs entail. So I can keep going through this, but it gives you an idea of all the different programs we offer, the different partners we're with, and we give the kids information about jobs. You know, what can you earn in that field? What's it look like? You can get a great job here in Nuwam in the technical skill area and have a house and a family without going anywhere. And we do highlight all the different pathways in CTE. We don't just stick to manufacturing as one. So we hit up all the different pathways that are possible, providing programming. And it takes time, money, and resources for a school to do this. But it's important for us to do it. So this gives you a quick look at what we're currently doing. What we're proposing and planning right now is much different at a higher level because of our community. So here we have a CTE center. I'm assuming you see everything in presentation mode, don't you?
Yes. In fact, okay. We see your notes too.
I don't have any notes. I'm sorry. I leave those. Right. So the purpose of our CTE center, exposure, gain certifications and credentials before leaving. And I know her, I heard earlier about from the representative who was Minneapolis grad about back in the 70s and getting the opportunity to be trained and have a great skill to go. We are kind of circling back to that in our area and how do we provide kids these opportunities. So they go to an employer and say, hey, I am skilled in welding. I have a certification in QuickBooks. I have my CNA. I am working on my med tech license or certification. And these are currently the partnerships we have in Nawam for our Career Technical Center. Great industry business partnerships. That goes back to comment you heard earlier about having your committees to talk or your advisory councils and how you do that. All of us do that type of work. The chamber, Chris Dalton was on earlier to be a partnership member to talk about the chamber, or not the chamber, but the city and what they're doing in New Ulm, the college connection, and so forth. So we have a lot of good partnerships. These are the programs we're going to offer in the fall of 2021 in our CTE center. I won't read them to you, but these are the overarching programs we're going to offer. Now, what I don't have is I don't have an instructor who's qualified in every one of those areas. There is no instructor qualified in all those areas to do justice to them to do certification. So we're taking people out of industry. We hired to it an engineer with no teaching degree, and we're going through the process for the tier thing to provide the right pedagogy for how to teach. But he has a passion for milling, for welding, and for auto body. And working with that, that's going to help fill some of the niches we can. So you see the programs we have planned, how we're doing the plan. The delivery model, and I'm not sure who experienced what, but back in the 70s and early 80s, we had vocational centers spattered throughout Minnesota regionally, where different school districts, whether it was at the county fair location, at a different school, a different community, we had vocational centers. We're going back to that type of methodology here when we call it a CTE regional center, and it's for 16 plus. Ours is also going to be available for adults to get recertified in the different jobs they have in New Ulm. We have a lot of industry, a lot of business, a lot of manufacturing, medical that needs recertification. So our job is to continue to do that, offer it for adults and students. We've been doing a lot of work on this. The bottom line is the last bullet is we're going to start classes in the fall of 2021 at our new CTE center. So our outcomes, we plan on having credential certification in 3 to 4 programs in the first years of the center. We already have multiple ones at the high school. We want to increase as we do that at the CTE center. And then bottom line is we have a lot of kids who go off to four-year college and they come back after the first semester or first year going, why did I do that? And then we're trying to pair them up with business organizations and industry as partners to give them an idea what these skills could be used for or what the jobs are so that we have a business who has a valid worker who has the skills necessary. And the employee feels valued that the stuff that they're doing is making a difference for them themselves. And they're not wasting their time or their money. So this is really what our CTE Center overview, what we're going to do. And the reason I bring this up to the committee today really is to talk about support for CTE. And you've heard different things about licensing. You've heard about the program and the careers. But from an on-the-ground school working with kids today and how we're doing this, we have a great partnership. But again, I can't keep going back to the kitty to ask for more money. It would be great if the state could look at it in perspective. How do we support CTE and don't push it on the levy saying levy more? We know that through the levy system, there's been enough levy increase going on to help with vocational programming, but it doesn't do enough to keep things going sustaining-wise. The Carl Perkins grant through the federal government comes to the state, it's distributed up to the Perkins consortiums to figure out how to best use them. And you're parceling up the money. So at some point, how can we support CTE, whether it's regionally or at the local level, in a little bit more robust area? We do college in the schools, we do advanced placement, we do IB, we pay for ACT testing through the state. At some point, we need to focus also on the non-four-year track at the state level to get these jobs filled. Without these skilled jobs, we have an economy issue, and it's going to be a big force in the next, I'd say now into the next 5 years. That's my quick spiel about the CTE Center, my passion about the program, and my want or wish from the committees to take a look at this and how we can better impact kids by supporting the programs locally.
Superintendent, I've got several members who have questions. You're the second superintendent in this legislative session that has testified before the committee and then also started as a shop teacher or a vocational ed teacher. Retired superintendent Scott Hannon, who you probably know, was the first. So with that, I'm going to go to Representative Hamilton. You're first on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the superintendent, I represent the district that's right next to you. I live in Mountain Lake, Minnesota, so I'm very familiar with New Ulm. And you had on one of your slides that you have a partnership with a entity called Big Ideas. I believe it's bigideasusa.org. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that partnership? I know I've had other people ask about it. If you could, please. Thank you.
You bet, Representative. You bet, Representative Hamilton. Big Ideas, Inc. is a company that started locally here with the idea of opening up awareness to the career trades to youth and adults. So they go around, and in the last 2 years, they go through our community education programming. And we offer our high school site up for them to do it, and many schools in our area have done the same thing. It's through the community ed programming. They now have a mobile trailer that they're sending out to schools to have kids in the exploratory area for the hard, you know, it goes back to those schools who can't afford it. It's a great opportunity for them to use that trailer, go get some idea about the experiences, whether it's welding, medical, manufacturing, and then come back. So they kind of check out the trailer back and forth is what they do. And they can't do, obviously lately, a lot of community education classes haven't happened physically because of COVID. So I imagine that'll kick up. But because of Marianne Christensen, who started the company, she's from New Ulm. We work together. Our teacher's actually on the board for Big Ideas. So it's a partnership we have about working together to make sure we do the introduction together. We talk about the next levels and how we get the certification level.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my next question is, with that, are they able to get licensed instructors? Is that a problem at all?
Superintendent Bertram.
If you're asking if Big Ideas can get licensed instructors, they bring in professionals from the field. So if they're going to do an intro to plumbing, they bring a plumber in. Let's assume it's a licensed plumber. If they're doing cabinetry, they bring in one of our retired shop teachers to teach cabinetry. If they're doing culinary arts, they'll bring in somebody who works in the field in the restaurant business. So they bring in those folks to teach those courses. There is no outcome to become certified or credentialed through Big Ideas because they don't have the people who are credentialed to do those certifications.
Thank you. Thank you.
Number three, members, we have one more person on this topic. It's the city manager from New Ulm. I'm going to let him testify, then I'll return to my list. So city manager Chris Dalton, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair, committee members, thank you. My name is Chris Dalton, city manager for the city of New Ulm. And I'm here today just to kind of echo what Jeff Bertrand has said. I have moved to Minnesota about 3 years ago, and I came from California. And when I came here, one of the big things that I noticed is New Ulm has an aging population. We are heavy in the industry, and we didn't have what I would consider a workforce center in the area. And that was kind of a big concern. And in my short time being here, Jeff had approached me with his white paper about doing a career technical education center. And to me, that really hit a nerve, struck a chord with me as something that this is what the city needs to get behind to address a lot of the needs that everyone has brought up that has testified before me. And so, working with Jeff, we've gone through a lot of different ways to look at funding for this program. We applied for some federal grants, and then COVID hit. So that kind of sidelined some of that. And then we brought it to our Economic Development Commission and really brought it before them and told them that this is something that really hits the economic chord and the priorities for the city as it fills the gap for that workforce development. It helps create a pipeline for our businesses of industry that, again, when we go out and outreach to them, have those same complaints across the board. We can't get enough workers. We have to, bus people in to fill some of our positions. We have people that are going to be retiring and no one to fill those particular skill sets. And so with the CTE Center, you know, coming online and coming in, you know, this hopefully August of this year, it'll start putting together some of those pieces that I think the city needs. You know, and being in outstate Minnesota, we need as much help as we can get to help attract businesses, retain our businesses, and that's what the CTE Center is going to provide for us. Because with that being here, you know, the city will work with the school district, and what we'll do is we'll end up putting a workforce plan together. So when we are looking to recruit, when we are looking to retain businesses, we can show any prospective business that, yes, you are looking for these workers. We do have a pipeline available to you for you to have those workers. And so, you know, with our cost of living being a little bit lower than the metro area, I think it'll really help our community sustain and where we need to be moving forward into the future. You know, and much like everyone else has testified here, it's the continual funding of something like that. You know, the city will always be a partner with the school district, but we don't have unlimited pockets to help, you know, permanently fund this stuff. And, you know, again, the community has been really good. A lot of the community partners, you know, a lot of the industries are willing to step up and help. But at some point, you know, we will have to figure out how to keep this as a sustainable program to fill the needs of the city. So, you know, I don't want to take up too much of time. I know there's plenty of questions probably for Jeff, but this is a really a big deal for the city of New Ulm to help keep our community thriving and moving forward into the future.
Thank you. Members, we're going to return to my list. So if you can identify if your question is to the superintendent or city manager. Representative McDonald, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is to Superintendent Bertrand. I think many folks appreciated your comments and your thoughts and is very enthusiastic. I'm on board with you 100%. However, I agree that the state should be very careful in mandating what schools do and what they teach and what they don't teach. However, you mentioned civics. I hope that you agree with me that civics are very important that our students learn. So if there's any more mandates coming from the state legislature, and I'm not all for mandates, I would suggest civics. I think our students need to know about this great country and the opportunities that that we have and that our past has given us. So with that said, I had to get that out there. Our colleges are really enticing our kids as well. They're pulling just as hard as we will, hopefully, with this committee and going forward, getting kids into the skilled labor and going to technical education. But they're going to pull hard as well. And kids, young kids coming out of school, it's attractive to move out of the house, to be in a dorm, to take part of the college life, if you will. So what do you think, and others on the committee as well, maybe Mr. Cashman, and Haugen, what can we do to further entice our children to go into the trades and seek a skilled labor technical education and compete with the colleges of them attracting the students as well? We need to almost get to the parents additionally first, if you will, if anything. So your thoughts on that?
Superintendent?
You bet. Thank you, Representative McDonald. I didn't want to mislead you. We do teach civics. It's already required in the curriculum. So when bills get introduced to teach civics, it's kind of like maybe we should know what we already have to teach.
Okay.
The second thing is I agree they need to know civics. that's a true statement. To talk about your question about introducing. So when we had a conversation with parents 5 years ago to talk about the transition in thought that just because you want your kids to have life better than you did doesn't mean four-year college. And we're all seeing the effect. You read the news clips about kids who get the four-year college debt, don't have a degree that they can use, didn't like the fact that they went and spent that time in college and couldn't do anything, and now go back to a technical school to get something that gives them a job that can pay their bills. But they still have 10 years of debt over their head. So our conversations have been just that when we have open houses and parent information nights. Here are opportunities for kids from high school graduation until whatever they want to do. We give them all those things in latitude. And I'm not going to take away that kids need who want to be in a four-year program should be in a four-year program. They should be. But we need to right-size the pendulum here so it's not too far to the right or left about getting the kids one direction or the other. It has to be right-sized for how we do this. Another one I have, I could go into a long list of things, Representative McDonald, about issues we have with legislation. Department of Labor and Industry doesn't allow kids to go into manufacturing firms under the age of 18 unless we belong to the youth apprenticeship internship program, where the state comes down and invalidates that the place that the kid may do an internship is safe by OSHA standards. And then the art industry says, you know, that's too much work to go through. So there's some other ways to get these kids earlier experiences on the floor. You know, I often hear from organizations here locally that you prepare them for life, we'll teach them the skills. And I always say, we do that, but do you know that they don't know what you do? And until they get on the floor, they're not going to know what you do. We can talk about it, but I'm a picture guy. I'm an action guy. How do the kids get experiences? So we're trying to crack that nut on getting the kids into the actual locations where these jobs are to see what does a plasma cutter look like in industry versus a simulation. So getting them more experiences early is the ticket to having them understand their careers. You know, I went to college. I didn't have to live in a dorm, thank God. So I hear you. But I think if we get to them early and provide the opportunities, they have an idea that, you know, the best chance to make their own decisions and not too late. 18 is too late to get a career orientation about some career they've never had. Does that answer your question?
Representative McDonald, before you get the next chance, the previous testifiers had to drop off. They're busy at work. So Representative McDonald, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Yeah, or Mr. Bertrand. Yes, it does, certainly. And I am all for different pathway other than a four-year college for those students that choose that as well. And just a quick story, Mr. Chair, if I may. My son, Jacob, whose deer is right behind me, his first deer, he's 20 years old. He went to his first year of college, was South Dakota State Brookings. I was very proud, his mother and I, and he wanted to be a conservation officer. But to realize that that wasn't the path he wanted. So after his first year, he came home and decided to seek an apprenticeship with a local plumber, heating and air conditioning here in Delano, and is doing wonderful. He loves the work. He's in an apprenticeship. He's been there a little bit over a year. He's 20 years old. He bought a 5-bedroom house in Montrose, Minnesota, where he's fixing up. He's making a good career, loves the work, and doing very, very well. His mother and I are very proud of him. And that's a career pathway that just opened up to him because he decided to look at other options right here in town. And that's the thing that we need to share with our students. And I agree with you that we need to start before 11th and 12th grade. Representative Keel said even in the 9th or even 8th grade. And Mr. Chair, we certainly need to do that. And let's set up some legislation, Mr. Chair, that allows students that are 18 to be able to do a little apprenticeship or work in the manufacturing industry. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair. Kind of what Superintendent Bertrand got at before in terms of how the students can have just the actual exposure to those industries early on is kind of where I was going to go. I grew up in Chicago and I went to a school. Now, this goes back to the old vocational model. But part of that program, what we had was it was called a work study program. We had a block of hours, about half the day, during our junior and senior years, where we actually went to the companies that were partnering with the school districts to have access to those careers, you know, up in real time. And some of our, and many of my classmates, upon graduation, they had gained those skills. They had also gained those relationships, and they went into those careers, and they're still in those careers today. So I find that as a vital piece of this. I am all for CTE. I am glad that we've gone away from the, you know, just every student college ready. I'm glad that we've gone to a college and career ready. And I think this is a part of that. So I appreciate the presentation. I'm looking forward to checking out that center once everything's set up and going and we're out of this pandemic times. So thank you for the presentation. And I'm looking forward to moving forward with this stuff.
Thank you. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I have a few questions here. First of all, Mr. Bertrand, do you accept homeschoolers that are juniors and seniors that could be part of the CTE programs?
Superintendent Bertrand?
We sure do. We do that now with our other programming, too. We call it shared time. They may come for a couple hours a day for a science program or a current CTE program. We also are very fortunate that we have two other non-public schools in our district. So those high school kids have the same opportunities. And this, when we talk about this regional center, it's for all kids in our district, not just the public school. So, you know, there is a passion out there for other kids in the trades that don't go to our school. We want to make it an opportunity for them to do that as well. And I didn't mention it, but year two of this center is to bring in our ALC kids to the classrooms there. So the ALC kids have a purpose to finish to get their diploma and get a certification at the same time.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is excellent to hear. I have an autistic nephew that did okay in school, excellent in math, but the rest of schooling was writing and stuff was really stretched for him. He graduated, sat at home for a year. A friend said, hey, I got a job you might want to do. He's now one of his boss's best workers. He's 25, and he's really blossomed. So I'm glad to hear that we're looking at, you know, all the different students. And I actually have quite a few grandchildren that live down in your area, so I'm aware of the private schools and all of that. But when you talk about funding, I think that I'm not sure. I have to look this up myself, but giving businesses tax credits for things such as helping to purchase plasma cutter or any kind of equipment that I believe that was in existence. I don't know if it still is. Is there any of that type of stuff when businesses donate time and or treasures?
Superintendent?
Obviously, I'm not a tax expert, but I do know that, and Chris may be able to answer this from the business standpoint, when they do a donation, obviously it's a process they can write off because the school is a nonprofit. Chris, do you have any information on that one?
Thank you. Representative Keel, it would be a tax write-off from that perspective because they are donating the equipment to the school. Other than that, I don't know if there's any other implications for them to donate equipment, of that sort.
Okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe that's something, we can look into and pursue. I know that DigiKey in my district actually encourages students that work for them during the summertime. They go to Northland Community College and get a degree, and should they satisfy certain requirements, DigiKey offers to pay for their schooling, their after high school costs when they have been successful. And so that's another way of helping the students get farther. And then they've been working in the business probably as a junior and senior. But I will echo the concern about letting our 18-year-olds, our younger people work. And I will do that by way of, I have a grandson who's 18, but is very successful and has been for a long time. He started pushing a mower at the age of 7. His dad made him do a push mower rather than a riding, so he understood the mechanics. But I know a lot of people would be just like horrified, and yet he's very careful, very understanding of machines, and of course drives all our big tractors now, and very complicated machines because he's had that experience. And growing up on a farm gives us that opportunity to do a lot of things that the kids in the city don't necessarily have. And so we are, by our rules in OSHA and DALI, we're cutting that off. And I understand how dangerous it is, and really think we need to relook at what we're doing there. There can be some security things that are, you know, ways we can get around that. And members, I come from a school district that had an unfortunate death of two students because of a CTE class in mechanics, and they were working on a car, and there was a fire, and one young man went back in to get a friend, and unfortunately, they both died. And so, you know, there can be some risks. Schools need to be protected, but I really think that the importance of these programs outweighs the risks that we're taking. And we're really disabling our children by not having them give them exposure to careers and further education. So whatever we can do, I look for helping businesses, but I understand Superintendent Bertrand, your discussion about funding, you need to have some clear and consistent funding so that programs can, you can plan on them teacher-wise as well as the products that have to come. Those are expensive classes, and understand that. Thank you.
Representative Bierman, you're next, and I still have a slate of testifiers. So, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question for Mr. Bertrand, please. You threw out a lot of information. Thank you. It was very good, and good to hear that project in New Ulm. My question was, and I may have missed it, I just was wondering about the numbers of any internships, and particularly whether the CTE program is available throughout the summer at this time. And I'll hold it at that for now.
Superintendent Bertrand.
Well, Representative Bierman, good question. First of all, Representative Frazier, when the CTE Center is up and running, I will invite the committee down to see the whole program, just to let you know. But to answer your question, Representative Bierman, I'm sorry, I drew a blank again. Ask me the question again.
Sure. It was in regards to the CTE being open through the summer months and also the number of internships. I know you said people can't go on the floors of shops and businesses, but are there going to be internships related to companies in the area?
Superintendent Bertrand.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yes, we also have another program at the school that we do a job study where we place the kids who are 18 currently. It's a part of a semester course where they go through and learn different things like 3, 6, 9, or 12-week internships. But, again, the issue gets to be is they have to be 18 in most of our locations. When it comes down to the summer one, that's going to be our next step. We've tried a couple summer academies, and I know Joe Brown, the superintendent from Fairmont, has tried many times to get legislation through to provide funding to do weekends and summer-type programs so the kids have more opportunities. Because when their slate is full during the school day because of all the requirements, they can't access opportunities to see what these other careers are like. So if there's a way of using extended time in the funding formula to use it for CTE, because right now the extended time statute is for making up lost credit, lost learning. It's not for extending learning. So that'd be another one to look at from the committee standpoint, if you could. But we are taking it out of the district budget to offer these things for at night and on weekends when the CTE Center gets up and running, because we think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Bertrand. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I've got four individuals, and we're under 10 minutes. So I think we'll start. If we don't complete, could I ask the individuals to return next week? Would that be possible? And we'll continue next week and put you up front to continue. So with that, I have Dan McConnell. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan McConnell. I'm the business manager of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades Council. And with me today, I have Gary Thaden, who chairs the board that I sit on, the Construction Careers Foundation, that's been running the programming that we're here to talk to you today. And I'll just turn it over to Gary.
Mr. Chair, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm a management representative for about 300 construction subcontractors in the electrical, plumbing, and heating fields. I also serve as the board chair for the Construction Careers Foundation. And our foundation operates two main programs. The second one is Justin Roost, our director of Helmets to Hard Hats, will speak about that, especially his efforts to work on mental health and suicide prevention with our veterans. But first will be Pat Wagner, who runs our year-long programs, both during the school year and in the summer, in varieties of ways. To help people, especially women and people of color, to get into the construction industry. COVID has meant that we've had to change some things, and we think we have an opportunity with those change programs that we have to bring them more and more into greater Minnesota. So, Pat Wagner, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wagner, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Pat Wagner. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I am the Executive Director for Construction Careers Foundation, and as Gary shared, we have two primary programs. One is the Construction Career Pathway Initiative, and that's what I'm going to really step through with you today. We have sent you an abridged document. It's usually 30 pages long. We sent you a 12-page document, and due to time, I'm going to do a very high level and not go through every single page, but provide any additional information that we can. The primary focus of the Construction Career Pathway Initiative is to educate our emerging workforce about construction as a viable career. And not only the young people, but also the influencers, and some of you have brought this up earlier. We're really looking to educate parents and teachers and coaches about construction as a viable career choice. In doing so, we have programs, we have partners. We do not do this all by ourselves. And we partner with schools, we partner with some of the training centers and some of the community members. And so if you have the packet in front of you, I'm really going to be talking primarily on the page 2, which shows the framework. And what we have are activities that do career exposure, career exploration, career readiness, and then really helping young people on their path into construction as a career choice. The first part of our initiative in the pathway is an outreach campaign. I welcome you at some point to go to constructioncareers.org. It is a website that is full of information in terms of for a young person or anyone else to learn about the various trades within construction.
Hi, it's Dean. Leave me a message.
The rate of pay.
Please.
That just threw me, didn't it? There's all sorts of stories that a young person can relate to as well. And so what we've done is we have a social media campaign through Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter to kind of drive and guide people to this website. And it is being used even by the St. Paul Public Schools as they're educating all their sophomores in terms of various career choices. We are adding this year, we have a mobile app because students, this is their life, a phone. And that mobile app actually will provide a direct link statewide for apprenticeship opportunities and construction exposure activities. We're excited in 2021 that we're going to be having language translations. It will be in Spanish, Hmong, Somali, and English. The other enhancement that we're doing or program we're doing is we have a learning management system. We are developing online modules, training modules. We're working with the Department of Education. So we will be providing an online CEU training and apprenticeship awareness for teachers and counselors and administrators. So when we talk about our hands-on programming, we start in the middle school, and some of you have already mentioned how important that is. And our middle school programming is called Learn to Build. Historically, what we've done is had hands-on, fun, innovative hands-on activities for the middle school students. We started a pilot in 2017 with 36 students. We were slated in 2020 to have about 450 students. COVID came. We pivoted like the rest of the world, and instead we created and delivered take-home or at-home kits assembling, and they each had a different trade focus area. Going forward for the middle school, because we never know where the state of affairs are with the virus and so forth, we will be able and will continue to offer the hands-on component or the kits and or we're doing online curriculum. So the curriculum that we will have is for any middle school or organization that works with middle school students can utilize the curriculum that we're putting on. As we move along to career exposure, we work with Construct Tomorrow, who does one-day events throughout the state. Also during the high school students, during the academic year, we work with CAP schools, Construction Apprenticeship Preparation.
Executive Director Wagner, I'm gonna stop you there because your information is very good, and I would prefer that we pick this up next week and we can start over. so that we have time for members to ask questions. And if the four of you could return next week, we'll put you up front. I apologize for the time, but with the Zoom meetings, we're under a very limited protocol here. So, and you've touched on a number of things. I know the members will probably have questions, but so members will pick it up here next week, and then we'll continue with the slated information. So with that, meeting is adjourned, and thank you all.